You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
We've all heard the saying, a picture tells a thousand words, and the same can be said for deer mounts. A skull on the wall represents so much more than just a successful hunt. It represents the culmination of lots of work, some luck, and rich memories with friends and family. At Just One, we like to hang our skulls with skull hangers from Kibosh Outdoors. The hangers are secure, super easy to set up, and made in the U.S. They even have hangers for as little as $9 to get your skull sitting proudly at the perfect angle. Go check them out at KiboshOutdoors.com or follow the link in our bios and use code JUSTONE at checkout to save 10% on your order.
Well, we're back for another recap episode, and spoiler alert, it might be even more depressing than the last episode. Today we have Brian and maybe Trevin on. We'll see if he decides to actually be a team player or not. You know, ever since he became a guide, he's been all, I'm better than everyone. So we'll see if he actually gets on.
Yeah, you just let the cat out of the bag on him.
I did. Yeah. I did.
That's all right.
He's going to talk about it.
Oh.
$100 he talks about it within the first 5 minutes of him being on this call.
Yeah.
And none of us mention it. Is that the bet?
Yep.
Okay, I'll take it.
It's like Monopoly money, though, because Madison won't let me bet real money. But I'll have a stopwatch going from when he gets on to when he mentions it. But anyways, Brian, welcome to the show again. Thanks for being on.
Yep, not a problem.
Let's just jump right into it. I know how your season's been. Cam has some of the highlights.
Low lights?
Yeah, probably. But why don't you just let us know how your season's been?
Frustrating. Let's just leave it there. No, the end. Let's close it down.
Thank you guys for listening.
It's been a great season as far as actually seeing deer. Of course, you know, Austin has made mention on a few times on the podcast that I suck at hunting. I don't suck at hunting. I just suck at killing. So
setting the record straight. I just have to give you a hard time because you give me a hard time.
Yeah. Well, so there's reason for that. So,
hey, Brian, I'll be the one to encourage you here. We haven't hunted a ton together, but the trip up to Truman definitely showed me how much experience you have, and just being able to go up there and like, you were like the only one out of all of us seeing deer, and you sent Austin and I to a spot. And of course, when we listened to you, we ended up killing a deer. So you definitely know what you're doing.
Well, yeah, I went in and tied it up the night before, so it was easy for you to kill.
He's like, that it's right here. It's on a leash. It's hooked up to the fence here.
His name was Bucky. I didn't know if I told you that part or not. No. So, yeah, my season, has been eventful as far as seeing deer. Started off the season seeing deer, hunting the little urban area that we hunt down south. Always see deer in there. If you don't see deer, then you've probably been sleeping.
Yeah.
I can only think of maybe three or four times in the last 2 or 3 years that I've been hunting down there that I haven't seen deer. And of course, those have all been after I shared that spot with Austin and Cam. And they go down and murder my deer.
I have only murdered 6 deer down there.
Yeah. Yeah. So
real quick, it looks like Trevin's here or was here. Where the heck did he go? There he is. All right. Stopwatch is starting when I hit this. Here we go. Boom. Late.
This guy.
Sorry, guys. Hey. Repping the new shirt.
You actually did get it. I was like 50-50 on if you actually did get it or not.
Oh, the first time I saw it, I was like, I'm going to be the first one to buy this. And I think I was.
Give me another look at it. I like it.
For those who don't know, Trevin has an unhealthy relationship and obsession with turkey, and he's went as far as buying the NWTF's ugly turkey sweater thing with a turkey with a sweater on it and he's repping it tonight over Beatty Custom Calls. That's actually kind of surprising. So,
yep.
Hey, dude, you got the beard coming in nice too.
I appreciate it. I think it's all the guiding that I've been doing is giving me some hair. You know,
a minute four.
Smash the under. Smash the under.
Okay, it would have been so much earlier if you guys didn't mention the sweater.
I literally, you got on, I said $100. Trevin mentions that he's a guide within the first 5 minutes of him being on the call.
I never said I was a guide. I said I've been guiding people. So
guiding, technically you did it. A minute four.
All right.
Dave. Someone's the one who conceded.
Didn't you guys only kill two deer, though?
Well, so I have a story.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
But anyways, we were in the middle of Brian kind of telling us a little bit about his very eventful, uneventful season. So I'll hand it back over to you.
Yeah, now that I was rudely interrupted by the Oklahoma boy, guide.
Oklahoma guide. Or adult babysitter.
Yeah. Which I could probably use one of those. So if you ever want to come to Missouri and babysit me, I could really use it. So
I'll bring you lunch and stuff.
Perfect. Christmas tree, Debbie cakes. That's all I ask for. So. But no, so starting off the season, you know, seeing deer wasn't any issue. We went on our camping trip. I was seeing deer every outing. Everybody else didn't seem like they were. Mm-hmm. Finally got you guys convinced not to come back to the farm to chase deer that you guys were seeing on game camera because I didn't figure they would be there the next day. I don't know if you ever told me if they were or not.
They were not on camera. However, I will say a lot of the deer that we saw during like rifle season and stuff when we started hitting the farm again weren't on camera.
Yeah, they were just in different locations away from camera, yeah.
So, was he there? Maybe.
Potentially, yeah.
But wasn't on camera, wasn't where we would have set up.
Yeah.
So.
But I was glad that after convincing you guys not to go back and chase what you guys had positively seen on camera after being up there not seeing anything, that it worked out for Cam. Heck of a story that you had. You know, sound like it pretty much was walking right to eat out of your lap, pretty much.
Did we even tell you? Did we tell him about the first deer?
I don't remember.
The little spike buck?
Yeah, that, I think you told me at camp, but yeah.
Like five yards from Cam, I really thought that I was going to have to pull my pistol and shoot this deer that was about to attack Cam.
Yeah, I was about to be Ric Flair on that deer. I mean, headlock taking it down. I was ready.
That trip had a lot of the same frustrations that all season did for me. Seeing deer is not the same as killing deer or even putting yourself in a position to where you can. You guys all hunt out of saddles or out of trees of some sort somehow. I'm a ground hunter. I can get in close to trails and put myself in the spot that deer are coming, but that doesn't mean I'm always going to get a shot. On that trip, particularly, I remember two does that came in within probably 7 yards of me, but they were behind brush. You know, I was in a down tree, still had leaves on it, and pretty much buried myself in the thing and only gave myself probably 180 to 200 degrees worth of shooting opportunity. And of course, they come in directly behind me and smell me and bust out of there. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much my whole season right there. Getting in close, seeing deer, but not really getting the shot opportunity. All the way up until October 30th, I believe it was, went down to the little urban area, the corner that we hunt, and I believe it was you and Clyde were down there earlier that day, hunted in that same area, and gave me a heads up on the 9 point and kind of told me where he was bedded at. Sure enough, I get in there 3-4 hours later, he's in the exact same spot bedded down.
That really surprised me because it was like middle of the rut. And they all just bedded down and stayed.
Well, he had at that point, whenever I saw him, he had 4 or 5 does around him.
True.
And I'm pretty sure one of them was hot. So couldn't get into public area in that spot with just due to access and where I did have access to get into it. I was afraid I'd bust him out. So end up getting in a few hundred yards away from him, circled around, came in downwind and had 150 yard opening in between where he was bedded at and where I was stationed at. was able to use, look through the binos, see him up there. He'd get up every once in a while, push the doe around, lay back down, doe would bed down. And about an hour before daylight, he finally got up and split her off and started coming through that opening. And it was game on. You know, I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
On the edge of the opening to the woods where I was sitting out, there was a row of cedars. So it gave me, you know, a great hide from the field. So they couldn't see me before they entered in. Of course, as always, the doe came in first, about 20 yards in front of him, came in, wrapped around to my east side, which was upwind, thankfully, and ended up wrapping around to the south side of me, got through some taller cattail type grass, and I thought I was in the clear from her. The buck lost sight of her, started freaking out a little bit, kind of pacing back and forth, decided he would go ahead and come through the cedars, and as he was coming through the cedars, I was drawing back. And as I was drawing back, the doe had came out of the cattails behind me, blew, and took off, and that was that. It was a cool show. I've never seen a buck cut a doe like he did. It was like a cutting horse, cutting cattle. He took off, got around in front of her, power slid, cut her off, repositioned her, turned her around, took her back off the other way. Did that about three or four times until he got her where he wanted her. She knew that I was in there. He had no clue. He wanted her to stay there. She wasn't going to. She ended up going back through the opening. Right after he got out of the cedars and out of the clear, I grabbed the grunt tube, grunted at him. He stopped, turned about a quarter of the way, looked back just to investigate. He was tempted to come in, but he wasn't leaving that hot doe.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, ended up following her out. So at that point, with 30 minutes of shooting light, instead of busting anything else out of there, I just decided to go ahead and head back towards the truck.
Yeah.
That was frustrating. I was ready to sell everything, be done. That was the first deer I've actually drew back on this season. Probably seen 100 deer up to that point within shooting range, but that was the first deer that I actually drew back on. And to not have it come to a successful end like I wanted it was upsetting. It was just about everything I could do not to wrap my bow around a tree. and it was all out of my control. And I mean, that's what happens. That's why it's hunting. So move on. I really didn't do a whole lot of hunting in between there and deer season. Had a lot of jobs booked up so way I could afford to take off for the rifle season. Went up for rifle season up to Central Missouri to hunt with my dad and took my son mm-hmm. with me. Unfortunately, we didn't just see a whole lot of deer up there. I did shoot a doe during, I think it was that first Sunday of rifle season, but just didn't see a whole lot of pressure up there. Last two or three years, there's been tons of pressure in that area. And I can't say I blame them because it's their business and I use it too, but Onyx and Spartan Forge, you know, all of the hunt stands, all those apps that give people access to knowing where the little niche public properties are. Anybody can get on there now and they can find the little areas that used to be little hidden gems. And the more people that find them, the less of a gem they become.
Mm-hmm.
So it's changing hunting styles. I've started realizing that what maybe was a hidden gem isn't a gem anymore. It's okay to dive in, check it out and get out of there. There's one 20-acre spot that we've hunted that in the past nobody's been in there. This year we counted 5 stands in there.
Wow.
So, you know, it was just one of those things. It's gotten the pressure. There's no reason to be in there. Let somebody else have it. The areas that I have found that are more of the gems are because of Onyx and those type of apps. And people like the Hunting Public and Seek One of those guys, they're all about diving in deep, and that seems to be the trend right now. Everybody's diving in deep, and the areas within a couple hundred yards of the parking lot are becoming the gems now. They're becoming the hidden gems. If you can find a little wooded or brushy area right next to a public land parking lot where a big buck can watch everybody walk in and out and know who's in there, knows which way to go, they don't have any reason to go a mile back in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of been my revelation this season. Since rifle season, picked a bow back up. We had the extended season. I ended up getting another doe during the extended mm-hmm. season, and I got a doe in the early that one weekend rifle season that we had here in Missouri for the CWD areas. So I've got some deer down with a rifle. I'm ready to get back to the bow now. But since then, I've had some eventful hunts. Went down to an area on the Mark Twain, did some hunting, and end up getting in there a few hundred yards, maybe a half mile back, and got set up for an evening hunt. Looked like a good area, kind of a saddle on a ridge, a little flat spot on the side of it, you know, for a nice little travel corridor. If I was a deer, that's where I'd be walking through at. And probably after being in there for about an hour or so, I heard what sounded like a four-wheeler driving through the woods. It's the Mark Twain. This section, you're not supposed to be able to drive ATVs and UTVs through. So figured I was just hearing it echo through the hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, I'm out there with a rifle because it was the extended season. And I hear, I'm wearing orange, and I hear one of the guys in the ATV or the side-by-side say, there he is, and proceed to drive up within about 10 feet from me, drive across the whole ridge that I'm hunting, and back and forth across the backside of it. Fun. I stopped them. We had discussion when they pulled up there. They didn't want me hunting in there. They lived close to that area. They kind of thought that was their own little area that they could hunt and not have to pay taxes on because it's public. Was willing to run anybody else off that was in there. After a little bit, I just decided I'd go ahead and call the authorities, which not the greatest results with that. Nothing really came of it. They all told me pretty much they got off at 5 and they would look into it in the future. So I haven't been back to that spot. It's kind of feeding me there. End up picking up another piece of property just a couple weeks ago. A guy said, hey, I bought 10 acres. Every time I'm out there, I see deer. Go hunt them. You hear people tell you that all the time. Didn't know what to expect. So I gave up an afternoon, drove out there, took a look. And he had a barn on there, so I just climbed up in the barn loft with binoculars and was just glassing and counted over 30 does out there. So he had deer, which, yeah. Went in with my bow and blind, set it up, had deer coming out, started ranging, and my battery went dead in my rangefinder. So without knowing exactly what range they were at, decided I wasn't comfortable taking just any shot. You know, I kind of could guesstimate 20, 25 yards, and that's where my range was going to be at. And unfortunately didn't have anything come through there except for a coyote. And anytime I'm hunting and a coyote comes by, I'm coyote hunting.
Yep.
So I decided, well, I might as well figure out if I was guessing my ranges right, and flung an arrow at the coyote. And it was probably more along the lines of a 32-yard shot than a 25-yard shot. Complete miss. But at least I knew if anything else came by, how far it was, where I need to be aiming. Nothing else came by that set. Went back out there a few days later. Same blind, same setup. Same 30 deer came out into the field. Had one come in to about 25 yards. Everything was going perfect. I was reading the script, coming right down the path where I wanted it to. Wasn't really giving me a whole lot of attention anymore. It was already used to the blind, feeding its way through. I draw back, settle in. She steps out from behind a limb. I let one fly and thump. Good shot. Right where it's supposed to be at, right on the shoulder. Except for it was right on the shoulder with a doll broadhead. Was using an expandable broadhead. And I guess lesson to be learned, make sure your broadheads are sharp, no matter whether expandable, fixed, whatever. She ran about 40 yards, kind of limping, stopped at a down tree, stepped over the down tree, and then walked into a little cedar thicket about another 20 yards out. No sign of blood on her, wasn't a pass through. Got out, checked my arrow just to make sure, just a little bit of hair around the broadhead, no blood on it really at all. No penetration, like zero penetration on it. About an hour later, she comes back out of that same cedar thicket, following a couple of fawns, with a nice little haircut on that shoulder and just one little pinprick in it. And just like one drop of blood coming out of it. And she ended up feeding around me about 65 yards. So it's been an eventful season.
No shortage of deer. It's just been putting them on the ground has been a struggle.
Yeah, I like the 30-06 a lot better. I know you guys have talked about, you know, you guys shoot your bow a lot more and everything. I don't shoot my 30-06 any more than I shoot my bow by any means. But I know where it hits, and it doesn't bounce off a deer.
That's fair. If you actually shoot the deer where you're supposed to, though, and not the shoulder, it usually goes through.
25 yards.
Oh, also, you have to be drawing more than 40 pounds.
Oh, okay.
Facts. Yeah. True.
How much are you drawing, Brian?
Right around 60.
Okay.
It kind of shocks me that that's like it seems like the arrow just hit and stopped and bounced off. And, you know, I'd expect 60 pounds should punch through.
Should bust through, yeah.
Oh, you would think. But, mm-hmm. you know, like I was telling Austin earlier, you know, that mechanical, I think if it was a dull fixed blade or a smaller surface area or broadhead, it probably would have punched in. I don't think it would have gone completely through, but it would have definitely gone into the scapula. I just think with that broadhead that I was using, you know, 2.5 inches of spread on it, and it was as dull as a butter knife, it doesn't matter how hard you hit them. You know, it's just a blunt force at that point in time.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, that's been my season. Hopefully it improves, you know. I went back to fixed blades, made sure they were all sharp, put them on the whetstone, got them all razor sharp, and I'm going to go back out and find her and show her what I can really do next time.
Sounds like you got a good spot to go. And with how much ground hunting you do, like, I love using expandables, but if I was hunting on the ground as much as you, I think I'd probably use a fixed blade just because you never know what kind of angle shot you're going to get. And you get in some pretty tight spots, and you had an issue punching through. Was that this year, Brian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On half rack.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, that's one of the downfalls of hunting from the ground for sure, is you have a lot more stem count in front of you, but that's also why I haven't drawn back on, let's see, that the doe that I shot was the only second deer I drew back on.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's why I don't draw back on every deer. You know, I get in close, I get in tight, but a lot of the times I don't even draw back until I know they're going to step into an opening. And whenever they're 5 to 7 yards from you, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
What fixed blades are you going to use?
They're the Montec G5s is what I've got on there now.
Those are pretty sharp.
Yeah. That's what I killed my first archery deer with in Nebraska last year.
Last year. I killed my first with one of those too.
And then shameless plug, I killed my elk with a Grim Reaper Carney 4.
Oh, here we go.
every week.
Accurate out to 82 yards.
You don't even have to be accurate with those things. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
It's like shooting one of those turkey ones.
Yeah.
But it looks like a field tip until it actually makes contact, and then it becomes one of those guillotine like turkey broadheads.
Hey, Austin, I don't know if you've told anybody, but did you go elk hunting this year?
Went this year? Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
How far was that bull that you shot?
82 yards. Carney 4, Grim Reaper. Look it up. Point BTM 34.
You can check out the full video on YouTube.
Badlands camo.
Man, this guy is wealthy.
Bam.
Shooting the Black Eagle Rampage. AAE Max Veins. Amazon Knox from China.
There we go.
Buzzard Roost saddles made right here in the great state of Louisiana should be on every Louisiana bow hunter's list as a must-have in their hunting arsenal. Buzzard Roost saddles achieves comfort through adjustability for those long day sets during the rut, and also provides the maneuverability to get up and move when you see the need. Buzzard Roost saddles was created with the need to lighten the piro as well as the backpack to go deeper than everyone else. Louisiana bow hunters are a mixed bag, and Buzzard Roost Saddles is the tool to fit any job. Whether it's public land, private land, hardwoods, pines, or even the bottomless swamps, Buzzard Roost Saddles has what you need to stay mobile.
So, Trevin, I want to hear about your season.
God. Skip. On to the next person. No. I
told all my bad stories. It's your turn.
I think my season's been worse than Brian's.
Have you seen?
Yeah. It's not been great. Not even a little bit.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Your new employer doesn't know about the podcast, right?
Yeah. I mean, I told him about it.
You may want to just keep this one hush.
Oh, no, I told him that I missed. I've told him, and he laughed. So we'll go back all the way to bow season. You know, I had one opportunity that I think I made the right decision in, didn't draw back, didn't take a shot at a really good buck at 53 yards, and that was really at the beginning of October. Walking through a draw, and I thought, oh, this is a great start to the season. You know, I'm going to run into some good bucks this year. You know, there's a lot of them on camera. So I was just really positive. You know, thought I made a good decision, thought it was going to pay, you know, play out way better than it has so far. So fast forward into rifle season, and I think this is the first time that I'm declaring this. I'm officially retiring from ever using a long rifle type gun ever again. Because muzzleloader season, we get a good cold front, and I'm like, this is going to be great. You know, deer are going to be moving, and it freezes, and I get a shot at a doe at 70, 80 yards. And complete miss. No idea, you know, what happened. Felt great about the shot. Go out, look for blood, nothing, you know. And so I'm just kind of hanging my head. I'm like, I mean, I felt great about that. You know, fast forward to rifle season and Thanksgiving morning, about 11:30, the biggest buck I think that I have probably ever had an opportunity to shoot at. He was a giant, like at least a 150s, 160s.
Now you sound like Deegan.
No, like, oh, I was shaking. I see this giant buck. This doe is full sprint, like running away from this buck. And it's 11:30 in the afternoon. And he is just hauling towards her. And I get him to stop. And he's kind of quartering away. And I'm using a 30-06. My boss let me borrow his gun. And I sighted it in. Thought it was all good. And I took a shot. And I must have shot over his back, because I felt so good about the shot. I felt like I was steady, you know. I slowly squeezed the trigger, you know, let it surprise me like you're supposed to. And could not find any blood. Couldn't find anything. And he acted completely fine. I don't even think he knew he was shot at. He was just so tired from chasing that doe. And went, looked for blood, didn't find anything. And then so I'm pissed off at this point. I'm just like, this rifle hunting, gun hunting sucks. And so I hop across, you know, the fence, go to the other side of the property. And this doe's coming out. And I'm like, all right, I need to at least fill the freezer. And she comes in about 60. All of these deer are inside of 100 yards, mind you. So easiest shots that you could make. And I don't know if it's just something psychological, but this doe comes out and I don't miss her. I hit her really high in the, you know, I was aiming low too, so it could have been the gun. I'm going to blame it on me, because there's no excuse for me to miss that bad that many times this year. And so she sees me, she's walking towards me, kind of trotting, And I'm like, oh, this is going to end up in a dead deer. And I shoot, and she mule kicks. And I see where I hit her. And I'm like, that's not a bad shot. It was a little high, but... And then I go look. She runs under a cedar, stops, and is looking at me. Kind of like shakes it off and runs off into, you know, another patch of woods. And so I go up to where she was. I saw blood coming out of her. Just a little bit, or at least where I hit her. And I'm looking for blood. I can't find anything. So I just follow her to where she ran. You know, the tree that I saw her under. No blood, nothing. And so I just keep following where she went. Found no trace of her. I think what I did is I hit her in that dead zone. And I think she's going to make it. Because she didn't act like she really cared. She was just running completely fine. And so...
Man.
So, yeah. I'm officially retiring from rifle hunting. Forever. For the rest of my life.
So this has kind of been your first year hunting Western Oklahoma, right?
Yeah.
So what, I know it's kind of been challenging. It's been different. You want to talk about that at all?
Yeah. It has been, I've had opportunities almost every time that I've been out. So it has been, you know, very fruitful. There's opportunity to, harvest animals, and I've started to, be able to find patterns, find scrapes and rubs, which is something that I was struggling with early. You know, the creek, I've been just exploring a lot of different properties that I haven't been to yet. And that's actually where that buck came out of, was a spot that I haven't been to yet, but it looks really good. You know, it's kind of like this taller field, overgrown field, kind of like on the edge of a creek bottom. And there's a bunch of like little trees with rubs on them and scrapes. And so I think that's going to be a really good spot to throw a stand. There's actually trees where I can put a stand, so that's going to be nice. But there have been, it's just, it's so hard because it's 1600 acres. And I'm the only one that hunts out there and I can't be everywhere at once. And so I think that's the biggest challenge is that I, you know, it's hard for me to, there's a lot of deer on this property. It's hard for me to, pattern them when I need to put more trail cameras out there. I need to figure them out. But yeah, it's been tough, really tough. And yeah, like you were saying, this is my first time hunting Western Oklahoma, completely different than Missouri, you know. A lot of fields, a lot of tall grass, you know, they could bed anywhere. But there is a cut cornfield now. That cornfield has been cut. It was tall all the way up till Thanksgiving. The farmer said he's starting to cut it. And there's a draw that leads right up to it. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that I could get a chance at another buck. Or just something to fill a freezer, because Austin, I might have to have you shoot another deer for me, or Cam, or Brian, because I can't do it myself. So,
but so the one takeaway I got from that
is that I sucked. Yeah.
No. Not that you suck. I guess. Yeah, kind of, but. I heard you say that you're one person and you can't hunt at all. So I think...
my phone's never rang.
I think a J1O Christmas trip needs to happen. Forget the Christmas party. Actually, no, we'll do the Christmas party, but we'll do it in Oklahoma and Trevin will pay for all our tags, is what I just heard.
Yeah. Just Brian and Clyde aren't allowed because they miss almost as much as I do.
Yikes.
Almost. Not completely. Just almost.
The only deer I've shot at this year I hit with my bow.
Yeah, and it bounced off.
He just uses Nerf guns.
Catch and release.
Catch and release deer hunting.
That's good.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using foam tips next year with like dipped in paint, like a paintball gun. So you guys know which ones I've hit.
Yeah.
Brian's going to go down to some of our spots in like August and just start shooting deer and be like, if you see any with a blue spot, I've claimed it.
with the paintball gun.
Paintball. Oh, archer. With a paintball gun. Yeah.
Can't take archery equipment in August in Missouri.
I mean, you could.
But just, yeah, I suck at hunting. You guys, I'd need you guys to come out and help me figure these out. Because these deer suck and I hate them.
Hey, you come up. I'll show you where the deer are at. It's up to you if you hit them or not.
I think I could hit them with my bow. Not a chance with a rifle. And I don't know why. I've always felt really confident with my dad's 30-06. I've killed a lot of deer with that gun. And then just recently, I mean, I haven't rifle hunted in 2.5 years to 3 years, you know? And so I think that plays a big part of the last deer. Golly, the last deer I killed with a rifle was 5 years ago. And I didn't even think about that, but I was thinking where I'm going to put a stand, that buck would have been 20 yards in front of me broadside chasing that doe. And so probably still would have missed, would have gotten extremely nervous and excited. But I think taking a step back and looking like, hey, I've had opportunities to kill a big buck. I've had, you know, opportunities to kill deer. I've seen a lot of deer. So although I haven't been successful, it's felt like a successful season so far. Like I've been able to find deer, which has been really tough for me in the past. So.
Well, and just like when I came, cause I was just in Oklahoma and like driving through there going, how do you find deer here? And like thinking about that, I was going through there because, you know, in Illinois, you can just hunt the fingers of woods that run between two cornfields or mm-hmm. Nebraska or places like that. You're going to see deer. Here in Missouri, just find the pinch points, find where you see sign, and you're going to find deer. But there, they can be just about anywhere. Like you said, you know, they can stand up, feed in a field, lay back down, and you know, one day they're in the middle of the field, the next day they're on the other side,
mm-hmm. and then
2 days later they're on your side, and there's no telling where they're going to be. So it was and I don't have the answer for it. It's just kind of like that'd be a learning curve for me. And I think for you, this first season going out there and being able to put yourself in places where you find opportunities and can have opportunities, even though you haven't been successful.
Yeah.
You've at least found deer in a place that is completely foreign to you. And I think that's just setting you up better for next year. And, you know, you'll set up a stand, you'll get off the ground, maybe run a couple cell cameras that you can move, you know, start running them early and you can kind of move and see where deer are going. Some postseason scouting would be good too. And doing all that, I think, is going to be beneficial for you. And then, you know, not to mention what you're going to learn guiding.
Yeah.
I think will help you too, because you're taking people out, but you're also hanging out with guys who do this for a living.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of like they have a lot of knowledge. It kind of brings me back to Cam's buck, where Brian was like, you know, probably just go here and like kind of gave us some reasons why, and it played out perfectly for us. So
yeah, and I think having, you know, just the mindset of it's gonna come together at some point. It's not, you know, yeah, it stinks right now and I'm still learning, but it's bound to come together. Like mm-hmm. if I'm able to continue getting in these situations, and especially with a bow, you know, early bow season was tough, but I think it's tough for anybody.
I think the late season bow is going to be so much better because there's a lot of, not a lot, there's two main food sources that are led by, like, draws that lead directly into those food sources. So everything in my mind is, and they're, like, away from the roads. They're not, you know, it's kind of a hike back in there. And if I kill a deer back there, it's going to be miserable. But it's just going where my whole mindset is going, where I think the deer are going to be. And they've been there. So it's like, okay, maybe I am picking up on these things to use next year or late season this year, January this year, you know? So, yeah.
How late does your season run there in Oklahoma?
The 15th of January.
What are the baiting, like, laws there? Can you bait, or yep, can you do, like, mineral sites too?
You can do both. So that's something that I've been thinking about as well. The outfitter that I am now employed by puts out feeders, you know, and you can get a good inventory of deer just based on, like, what deer are in the area. And that's something
that throw out some schlog.
Yeah, dude, you don't know how you don't know how much I've thought about that. I'm like, this is bound to bring deer in because there's no hogs out here.
Mm-hmm.
These, I mean, there has to be deer that love that. And there's an old feeder that's actually on the property, kind of in a little clearing next to a like a little pond and like the dam side of the pond. So I'm really thinking about using that, kind of putting a camera up there, getting inventory, maybe hunting it or having Kendall hunt it, just to see what we get. Because finding deer without corn, I feel like, has been, you know, my mission this year. Because it's like, I want to find these deer naturally. Like, I want to find where they're traveling. I want to find what they're doing, how they're getting to food. You know, I'm not saying hunting over corn is easy, because it's not, as I saw this week. But I think figuring out a pattern is going to help you in the long run, of just growing your knowledge of deer hunting, you know?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with hunting over corn. If it's legal, I would do it here in Missouri.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I wouldn't have any problem at all. You know, if it's a legal method, and
yeah,
go for
it.
Yeah. If nothing else, like you said, even if you don't have mature bucks coming into it, it lets you know what kind of deer population you have on the farm. And
yeah,
if you choose not to shoot over corn, that's completely fine too. But at least if you have corn there with a camera on it, you know what you have on property. And if they're coming to that, then you can figure out where they're coming from. I mean, deer pretty much need three things: food, water, and shelter.
Yep.
You figure one of those three things out, or whichever one they're lacking in the area. If they're lacking water, make sure the pond has good water in it.
Yep.
If they're lacking food, which it doesn't sound like they are with your corn field close by, and I'm sure they probably do crop rotation, so next year is going to be soybeans and they're going to be back in there. So they have the food. So either provide them shelter or water, and you'll keep them there, or at least have them stay there longer.
Yeah.
That would be the only downfall of having, you know, a feeder next to a cornfield. Why would they eat out of a feeder when they can eat it fresh?
That's what I was going to say, is, like, honestly, something like the schlog or something might work better than just corn, or get like the apple scented corn or flavored corn or whatever it is.
Acorn, whatever.
Yeah. Just something different that they're like a food source that they're lacking there. Because if there's a cornfield nearby, why are they going to go to a corn pile under a feeder? You know, it wouldn't make sense, but maybe there's something sweet there. Or, you know, maybe you don't have a ton of oaks, you know, acorns would be perfect. Yeah. And because some of the studies on, like, deer, they're like us. They're like, you know, oh, I need to eat this, or I want to eat this, you know, like, oh, I'm getting a cramp, I should probably eat a banana or something. They're similar. Like, they know what foods give them what they need. So they're not always going to just hit the corn. They're going to hit corn, beans, acorns, grass, So that's what I would probably do. And then, you know, if you can sweeten it up and just add an attractant to it,
mm-hmm.
that would bring them in.
Yeah. And could like I did early season, I put out some of the trophy rock mm-hmm. and or just some of the like mineral, you know, apple flavored attractant, mineral, whatever they got. And it was super popular. Like, there was a lot of does and a lot of like young bucks, you know, some good bucks, 1 or 2 days that were hitting it. Just those big bucks, not as consistently. And I am not opposed to hunting over corn. I would definitely do it. But I think for
He's
me,
he's done it in Missouri.
No, I have not. Never.
Joking. Not me.
any game wardens listening to this, that is not true. But no, I'm like, I would hunt corn, but I think for me, learning more about whitetails and learning like how they travel, you know, what routes are they taking? When are they taking them? How are they moving? Because I learned a lot even just this week about, you know, post rut, locking down and not moving at all. Like these bucks are shut down. I had a client that got on a buck, got about 150 yards, watched him the whole time, but there was a doe right next to him and he was not leaving that doe. He was locked down. And you know, just that's going to happen. They're going to hunker up. They're not going to move. They're not going to get up until they have to, you know, until they are hungry, until they need water, you know. But that's why I'm excited about beginning of late December, beginning of January, when it gets a little colder because the weather's been crazy. Our rut in Oklahoma started right after muzzleloader season. And that was the very end of October, beginning of November, which is absurdly early. And it ended early as of like Thanksgiving, a few days after Thanksgiving. But just the opportunity to hunt over like a grain field or a Milo field, corn, wheat. I mean, the deer are going to go there. They're going to eat. They're going to get water. And so, yeah, I don't think I'm going to miss every single time. So I think an opportunity to harvest an animal is coming upon me.
We're going to save this part of the podcast for after season and see if it comes true or if he continues to miss.
Stay tuned, guys.
I might not draw back on another deer this year. I might just go out and take pictures.
Oh, here we go.
I mean, that's all you've been doing so far.
So,
yeah.
I guess as we're kind of wrapping up here, we're getting along. I see Brian starting to fidget, and I'm starting to fidget too. we asked Clyde and Deegan, but I'm curious for you guys. You know, it's been a good season in some ways. It's been tough in other ways. And like you mentioned, Trevin, it really is a numbers game at a certain point where you put yourself in the right position. It takes a couple stars to align, so to speak. And, you know, for Brian, that deer takes a couple more steps and he gets a shot. And it really is a numbers game. If you keep putting yourself in the right position, it's going to come together at some point. But for you guys, with everything that's happened this year, what's your mindset through the end of season? What are some things that you're going to kind of try and modify, try and change? And overall, what do you feel like the biggest lesson has been that you've learned so far this year?
For me, the biggest thing I'm going to change is get sharp broadheads. that's going to be the first thing I'm going to go out and do. Actually, I've already done. I'm looking forward to hopefully putting at least one deer in the freezer with archery equipment. I don't care whether it's a buck or a doe, as long as it's legal and gives me the right shot opportunity, I'm going to take it. I just don't want to finish out this season without taking something with archery equipment.
You put in a lot of work, so
there's no reason I shouldn't have that opportunity unless I just stay at home on the couch because I've been so defeated. But yeah,
same.
Definitely, I thought about taking Austin out there for the inspiration, and you know, so he gets some video and stuff. But last time I took him to a spot, then he took Cam to the spot, and then Austin and Cam started killing all my deer. So yeah, I don't know if that ended up for me.
This is private land; it's not public, so. Therefore, could like tell Max that I
who what I don't know who you're talking about.
Edit that out, Cam.
Hey, it's not our fault that you chose to go up to Truman for a week instead of going to your spot.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I had to go up and hunt with Dad though. That's tradition. I mean, that's ever since I've had a rifle in my hand, opening weekend of rifle season is always with family. So
I get it.
I want to continue that. You know, it'll be. Unfortunately, you know, he's getting to that age that one of these days it's not going to be an opportunity anymore. So,
Yep.
Definitely going to continue that as long as I can.
Yeah. We had, I mean, it worked out great for me this year, but I was really debating not going out to the farm because we just weren't seeing deer out there with my rifle. And, you know, just through talking with Cam and stuff, it was like, no, I need to be out here. And this was the first year that my grandpa did, come out with us and hunt, and it slowly progressed. Like last year he would come out for like an hour or two, and now this year he just wasn't able to get out, and I was like, you know, I'm still gonna go out there, it's still fun to be with family, and you know, it ended up working out pretty good. But I can relate with that a little bit. A question I had for you: are you going to try to get up in a tree next year?
Yeah, honestly, thinking about probably getting a saddle system for next year. Would like to try a couple of different ones out, just see how comfortable I am. I mean, being short and squatty and a lot overweight. Just want to see how comfortable it is. I definitely think that's, if I'm going to get in a tree, just the mobility of it is going to give me what I'm used to with being on the ground instead of being stuck in one tree constantly. That gets old. I don't like looking at the same surrounding all the time. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't like being in a tree very much. And especially during the rut, if you're not in it, you're out of it. I mean, if you're not in where the activity and the hot action's going on, the chasing and where that hot doe is at, there's no point to even really be in the woods at all, because you're not going to see them. They're going to have those does pinned down in a thicket somewhere. And if you're not in that thicket, then yeah, you're going to think there's not a deer in the county. So, having a saddle type system, something that's a little bit more mobile, a lot less weight than a climber or something like that, is going to give me more of what I'm used to as far as being able to get in, get set up, and hunt in different spots every sit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think for me, and something that Austin and I have, I don't want to say fought tooth and nail, but have kind of like, he has been offering some incredible advice, and I have just been like, no, I can do it without it. But getting up in a tree, I'm going to be doing that a lot more. It's just so hard. There's not a lot of trees, that are really good for throwing a saddle or throwing a stand. But where Kevin, that buck, came out, there's a really good tree line.
Hey, one sec. Restart what you were saying. You completely froze on us.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. No, so getting up in a stand is going to be the biggest thing. And I know you and I, Austin, had that
We can't hear you.
Trevin's not learning anything.
So what I think he was saying is he wants to get into a tree, but there's not big enough trees in Oklahoma.
Yep.
He's still,
talking.
Probably still telling us about how he's guiding and
I don't think can you hear us? There we go.
I can hear you now. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, we couldn't hear you.
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay. Getting off of the ground into a tree. I've said that three times. But it's true.
they're not going to smell you as much. You're going to have more opportunities. There's a lot of other trees on the backside of this property that I've figured out. And I think it'll create so many more opportunities that I wouldn't have on the ground. You know, that preseason scouting with more cameras that I can check more on a consistent basis, cell cams are going to be huge. And then stuff that I can do this year, along with getting off the ground, because I do plan on hunting in a tree in this draw that leads to the cornfield, is you know, late season hunting food sources hard. And hunting more than one day at a time, you know, hunting consecutive days. Now that I do have an opportunity to hunt more, get outdoors, I plan on taking advantage of that. And I think that consistency is going to be really important.
Mm-hmm. So do you plan on practicing any with your bow? And or I guess it wasn't the bow that you've had any issues with. It's a 30-06.
Yep.
And that's done for you, right, in Oklahoma?
I plan on never using a rifle again.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, I mean, I am being honest. Like, I don't know. I think that's going to be something that I'm going to need to shoot more in the off season, get comfortable with. Because at a target, I don't miss more than maybe an eighth of an inch from the center. But at a deer, I don't know what it is. I don't know where. Because I knew going into rifle season that my mindset was going to be different than shooting at a target. Obviously, it always is. So I really tried to focus on not overthinking it. And I overthought it. You know, Austin once told me, don't think, just shoot. And so that was not going through my mind. Just, oh my gosh, big buck. So I need to breathe. I need to take a deep breath. I need to focus. I need to squeeze the trigger, let it surprise me. Instead of just, okay, deer, shoot. And so.
I think there is something too, just like not thinking, like you said, you're going to have to practice more, but like when I get my bow and I have a deer come in front of me, it almost becomes second nature. Like I just go, all right, draw back. And I don't think, okay, aim here, do this, do that. But I think it's different for everyone too. So,
yeah, I think, another big thing this off season is practicing with my new Darton, bow that I'm going to be getting.
Which one?
Oh,
have you shot him yet?
No, I'm still, the Prelude is still one that I'm really, I know that that's an old bow, but I've just heard so many good things, but it's kind of like the Matthews Phase 4 and the Matthews Lift. I don't think there's going to be too much of a difference, between the new one. Conquest is one of them, right?
Consequence.
The Conquest was the old one. Yeah. Yeah, the Consequence looks like a great bow that I'm really thinking about getting my wife. Because I think that would be great for any newer hunter. It looks really clean. Like, it's a really good looking bow. And I know, Austin, you shot him, but I think that will be something really good, because I've shot the same bow for the past 8-9 years, and it's always nice to upgrade when you can.
Yep.
But I'm not going to get 3 new bows in the same year like somebody that I know.
I only got 2 new bows. Well, actually, if I grab a dart and it might be 3. Anyways, Cam, you want to wrap us up?
Sure. Guys, thanks for being on tonight. It's always great catching up with you guys. Hopefully we get to hunt together some more. I definitely know I will with Brian, hopefully through the end of the year, through the end of the season. Again, just keep your guys' heads up. Like, it's tough, but if you look at it from the perspective,
it's tough
sucking. It is. Austin had the best season of his life, but he'll be in the same position here in a couple of years, I'm sure.
I'll be humbled real
soon. I hope, and this is horrible, and Austin, you are one of my closest friends, but I hope that you don't see a deer next year.
Wow.
Oh, he'll see deer. Because he'll hunt my spots, so he'll see deer.
Brian doesn't know I put an air tag on his truck, and I just follow him around.
No, I'm totally kidding about that. Austin, I'm sure that your luck is going to carry over, and hopefully you can pass them on to everybody else, because other than Cam, I don't think any of us have been as successful as you.
I am very open with my secret. I wear blue Hanes underwear from Walmart. I'm like the rest of you. I just wear a different color underwear. And here's my theory before we wrap up. My theory is deer can see blue. That's why you don't wear blue jeans. So I'm giving the deer a fighting chance by wearing blue, even though it's under everything. It could peek out. A deer could see it. I'm giving them a chance. And I've been rewarded for giving them a chance. You guys don't wear blue. So therefore you haven't been rewarded for, I mean, it's just, that's my theory.
I was wearing blue jeans Friday when I shot that one.
Well, you're in a tent. So that doesn't count.
Austin, anyways, you're unbelievable.
Blue Hanes underwear from Walmart. Go pick yourself up a pair and you'll have the same season that I've had this year, guaranteed.
I'm going to exclusively wear my new NWTF Turkey Christmas sweater for the rest of the year. And if I kill a deer in this thing, I will never not wear it again.
Did you not just hear what I said? Blue Hanes underwear.
Yeah, but I've done it before.
We're just going to go on in circles.
I'm gonna steal your pair of Blue Hanes underwear. Nah, that's taking a weird turn.
We're crossing a line, Cam. Finish wrapping us up. Hurry.
Yeah, we're getting to the bad place now. So thank you guys. Thank you guys so much for being on. And to all our listeners out there, thank you guys for sticking with it. If you want to be a guest, reach out to us. We love connecting with you guys. If you know someone who would be a great guest, put us in contact with them too. We'd love to just make more connections. The best part about this is getting connected with you guys and bringing you guys awesome content that you enjoy. So like always, we appreciate it, and don't give up. All it takes is just one.